We're going to start off being a little dreamy. Proper way to do retreat is not to like slap ourselves in the face trying to wake up. It's actually appreciate the dream world. Milam, dream yoga path. If we don't allow ourselves to drift and dream to begin with, you'll find it creeping back in later, right? Give yourself some permission now to be a little dreamy, half asleep, half awake. Can you do that? Of course, now that you were given permission, now it's like, okay, gotta be. So let's be a little dreamy, and then I'll give some teaching, okay? Just drift and dream for a few minutes. So now that we have Gompa here, temple, Dona Darge, it's been blessed by our head teacher, Jada Rinpoche, visited by two abbots of Sarajay, many beautiful teachers. We've had Wongs here, impairments here, Vajrasattva, and Jinang's medicine Buddha, Chenrezi. I have students that have taken refuge, and we've done our first Mahamudra Dzogchen retreat, and I feel good. Then we have some students, close students actually, seeing as Buddha, and it's kind of funny, Westerners have to say that, you know. Or started doing Nindra practice formally, then I can give these Mahamudra teachings and Dzogchen teachings. Otherwise, you don't have the correct container, right? And they aren't able to be digested properly. We have a saying in the Dzogchen Mahamudra tradition, if you see your teacher as a Buddha, you get the blessings of a Buddha. If you see your teacher as a Bodhisattva, you get the blessings of a Bodhisattva. If you see your teacher as an ordinary being, you don't get any. I don't know. I think, well, you might get something. I mean, you know, we like still like ordinary beings, right? Still like that. But this teaching puts the emphasis on seeing everyone's Buddha qualities, right? Not just the teacher's Buddha qualities, but our own Buddha qualities. So in today's workshop, I want to go over some fundamentals of Mahamudra. Even though we're not doing specifically a Mahamudra retreat, we call it Mahamudra workshop, so you get some structure. Then we'll be doing another Mahamudra retreat in end of October at Lotus View Ranch. So for those people that have taken refuge, or those people that are appropriate, then I'll see you there. The Drigan Kargyu lineage, I'm just being a little specific here, has a wonderful way of putting together the Mahamudra path. You know, they call it the fivefold profound path, fivefold path, Buddhists love numbers. So, and this is the style I've basically been teaching from. First, it's a bodhicitta, you must develop the wish for realization. Then second is the Idam practice, the deity yoga practice. Many times people in doing Mahamudra Dzogchen practice like skipping. They think, I'm just seeing pure nature mind. But without doing the Idam practice, the deity yoga practice, we tend not to see appearances as pure. You know, we need to see, it's called pure appearance, like everything that appears itself is Mahamudra. And to do this, we need to do these transformative practices that go under the Yidha means personal commitment, deity commitment, Buddha. Then the Guru Yoga, practice is where we're developing a union with the wisdom mind of the teacher called Lama Naljor. So then the Mahamudra practice specifically, and at the retreat we went over the ground path and fruition Mahamudra, if people remember correctly, along with Garab Dorje's three essential points. So then the fifth practice is the dedication of merit. I've given teachings on dedication of merit, right? I've given teachings on all of this, right? But saying it in this systematic way. Formally, even before beginning Mahamudra, we do the, people are required to at least start the practice of the preliminaries, foundation practices, at least the outer, it's called the outer foundations, which are still pretty inner. First one is the fortunate rebirth. It's incredible that we're here, Sacramento, we can hear Dharma, we can meet with qualified teachers, we have the motivation, we have enough health to show up. We're not being bombed or in prison. So the fortunate rebirth is first thought that turns the mind to Dharma. Second one is impermanence. The Buddha stressed impermanence, final teaching. All conditioned phenomena are impermanent. This permanent. So please practice now. Then the workings of karmic cause and effect are completely omnipresent. Even if we're doing Mahamudra Dzogchen practice, we're still going along with the world of cause and effect. Extremely important. When we start, we will finish. Then finally, the nature of samsara is really unsatisfactory. This is the hard one, you know. The hard one is maybe I can practice just enough so I'll be good enough and I'll stay comfortable and no more bad stuff will happen. You know, it's like maybe I'll gain just enough kind of energy to sustain it and nothing bad will happen. But that doesn't work. So these are called the four outer preliminaries. To start the Nindra practice formally, one really has to have the correct Guru Yoga practice, or it really, really doesn't make sense to do the Nindra practice. But those, just briefly, the four practices are the refuge, the Vajrasattva practice, which we may do a little later today. We'll see if Brian shows up at 11. And then the mandala offering practice, and it ends with the Guru Yoga practice. I know for some people this may seem like, wow, what's this got to do with my everyday life? this kind of saying, like, don't bring Dharma into your everyday life, bring your everyday life into Dharma, okay? If you bring the Dharma into your daily life, have that kind of motivation, it's called worldly Dharma. You know, how's this Dharma going to improve my life, right? Then we just want to lubricate samsara a little bit. I'd have 1,000 students, and we'd have already huge retreat land, stupend temple, if I said, oh, okay, I'll help make samsara nicer for you guys. But the Dharma goes the other way. You want to bring everyday life into the Dharma. And from a relative point of view, really, really practicing, really, really giving up self-cherishing, helping sentient beings and wake up, might make everyday life a little bit more difficult. You know, like, I don't know, people might get mad at you, or you might lose your house to bankruptcy, or you might manifest some illness, right? Or you might hang out with, you know, annoying people, right? So we have to give these warnings even when doing bodhisattva practice, like, Dharma may ruin your life. So. Otherwise, we're practicing the worldly Dharma. The worldly Dharma is we always want pain and we always want pleasure and never want pain. Always want gain, never want loss. Always want praise, never want blame. Always want recognition and never want to be ignored, right? That's huge, isn't it? So, in doing the Mahamudra teachings, we're going to have a dream body that assumes, like, oh, we're willing to make our lives a little bit worse. We're willing to work with the sufferings of other beings. We're willing to bring everything into Dharma. We're willing to develop equanimity so that whether pleasure or pain comes, we'll say, bring it on. Whether gain or loss comes, we'll say, bring it on. Whether praise or blame comes, we say, bring it on. Whether recognition or rejection comes, bring it on. Yeah. You can't do Mahamudra Dzogchen practice and say, I only want pleasure. I don't want pain. I only want to make my personal life better. Sorry if someone wanted an ordinary workshop. we have a lot of a lot of teachings here, like in the evenings and in the mornings, you know, just sitting, no particular demands, but now we're doing real Tantra Vajrayana teachings, lamas coming in robes, doing bows, seeing lamas, Buddha, so you have to give proper teachings, right? So We do have some meditations where just it's okay to be ordinary, but if you strayed into the wrong place, we did say we do have a title, right, Susan, Becoming Buddha, right? So, you know, so so maybe we do need another meditation. We have mindfulness, a lot of mindfulness meditations, but we should have one that says, being okay with being an ordinary person. We should have that, right? Maybe we should have that. You know, a lot of times people just say, I just want to be okay with who I am, you know? So we call that being okay with being an ordinary person. That's important too, right? You know, in a way. But that's not what we're doing here. So before we take a break, we'll stretch a little bit, and some people might have some questions about, like, what the rest of the day is going to be like, or what they're getting into, or discussion point. So if someone wants to make a comment or a question or a complaint, now's the right time. Hello? Oh, okay, good. Yeah. That's good. Hello? technically, when we use suffering and Dharma thing, we mean ignorant suffering, right? Not just relating with our confusion or pain in a clear way, you know. So actually, we don't want to, like, you know, ourselves be confused. We're not just sharing our confusion and jumping in to the mess with others from that point of view, but we're willing to work with our negativity in others. If you work with other people's negativity, including ourselves, you know, you're always going to get you're always going to pick something up, right? So when people in the helping professions understand that, if you really are, you know, in helping professions, you're going to be a little stressed when you go home, right? I used to hire people for Sutter and interviewed and help hire physicians, and I'd say, you know, do you get stressed? Are you stressed when you go home? And if people say yes, we'd hire them. If they say no, they're lying, right? Yeah, if you're helping others, we're going to take on, we don't identify with it. We don't say, well, that's my stress, or they're making me stressed. We just know if you're out in the warm sun, you're going to get warm. If you're in the cold, you're going to get cold. If you're in a perfumed room, you're going to get perfumed. If you're in a stinky room, so that's our pledge. We're willing to get some dust on us, right? But we don't have to say, I'm the dust. We don't have to identify with it, but we are empathetic. We're willing to get a little muddy. Yeah. Good question. Hello. We're always we're always doing all five at the same time. You know, we're presenting them somewhat sequentially, of course, but we're actually continually saying, you know, may the fruits of my practice benefit others. You know, we're always dedicating as we're going along, actually. So we're just kind of at the end of the prayers today, we do dedication, and you know, so, but we're doing it all along. It's kind of like if you're working on your PhD dissertation, you should be saving each page as you go along, right? Computers don't crash that much anymore, do they? You know, but remember the old days when you just kind of lose a document? Anybody remember those days? And somebody said, did you save it? And you go, oh, no! You know, so, yeah. So we're doing it, like, ongoing. Computer's ongoing now. They just save it, right, as they go along, right? Yeah, so we just continually, you know, offering that up so that our practice doesn't become some kind of personal badge or personal achievement, you know, like we're hoarding our Dharma, you know. Hello.
Can you say a little bit about how do you have empathy without identifying to a certain extent?
That's a good question, yeah. No. There's always an immediate identification that happens. That's how we know things. So, in a sense, you know, the mind, you know, takes on the color or the form, in a sense, of what it's looking at. So, a lot of times in Dzogchen teachings, lamas would have, like, maybe a red cloth and then put the crystal on the red cloth, and the crystal would look red, right? And then take off and say, okay, but not really red, but you know, the crystal takes on immediately on the color, right? So we have to practice to see that this process of taking on the color, the shape, and happens, and then, but also it retains its clarity at the same time. It's really interesting. That's a good question, because that's our basic difficulty, actually. You know, from inner teaching point of view, is that we identify and then we forget we've done that, and we don't learn also how to keep the identification with the spacious, open aspect of awareness too. We over-identify, and of course, we ultimately identify with our reference point called our ego or Atman. So that's basically what we're training to do, is how to have empathy instead of over-identification with limited aspect of awareness. It's easy. We just keep practicing it over and over. Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche had a nice phrase, I call it touch and go. You just touch and then go to spaciousness, touch, go. There's a constant rhythm going on. Hello there.
I also wanted to say that in the Western languages, especially English, like empathy and compassion means suffering with someone. But in the Buddhist tradition, that's not what compassion means. It just means wishing other people to stop suffering. I think it's also like a language thing. Like we're used to, oh, compassion. I feel really bad for that person. But that's not what it means in the Buddhist tradition.
Yeah, you're drawing attention to language, and it's helpful actually to know a little Sanskrit and Tibetan. But you know, even when we know that, or Pali, even, you know, even when we know these original languages, we still can, you know, depending upon our practice and disposition, we're going to define things different ways, right? So, I've mentioned a couple of times, maybe at the retreat, I said, okay, well, a translator and Dzogchen teacher, Keith Dauman, you know, who's done many fine translations, particularly of Jigme Lingpa's Yeshe Lama, says, Yeshe means awareness of now. It means awareness of now. Everyone translates it as primordial wisdom, but that's not it. You know, it goes on this rant, you know, so wisdom is prajna, blah, 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 and, you know, da da da, and rigpa is presence. Rigpa isn't, you know, knowledge. It's da da da. So no matter, you know, even when you know like a little bit of the language, like I do, you go, I know that people have their preferences, right? You know, so somebody says, okay, this means this and this means that. So, of course, when we're doing retreats, and now we need to be intelligent about language, you know, and we need to be intelligent, like, okay, what's the source of this teaching, and you know, what language system are we working with, you know, are we going language system of Dr. Gunther and translating prajna as appreciative, discriminative wisdom, or are we using you know, this person's translation, or, you know, Nalanda Translation Committee, or, you know, or doing, you know, Namke Norbu Rinpoche's translations, you know, like that. So it's really interesting, like that. Thank you for bringing up different languages, like suffering, you know, how do we, dukkha, you know, like that. What? How do we translate that, right? My favorite translation of dukkha, which usually translated as suffering, I had from my Zen teacher Eiken Roshi, and he translated as anguish. I would add traumatic screaming anguish. Because, you know, so when Westerners sometimes, or Asian lamas translate dukkha as unsatisfactory, that just seems weak. Sorry, my life hasn't been unsatisfactory. Stress. Who translates it that way? Yeah. So, I think sometimes it's helpful to hear it as stress too. You know, I'm not saying, you know, is this, you know, like, oh, stress. Yeah, got it. I thought, you know, so or just God, it's completely it's unacceptable. It's unsatisfactory. So each different word maybe gets at it. You know, whereas some people go, I can't relate to, you know, traumatic screaming anguish. That seems like, that's not my life. My life just seems kind of boring, you know. So so we could say, you know, it's really kind of boring as samsara. So like that. But in our tradition, yeah, we like to think about definitions, and it's definitely important. So should we take a short break? Let's take a little stretch break. I'm being fully Vajrayana today, so in Vajrayana retreats, actually, we don't do any walking meditation. Did you know that? Yeah. You do kora around stupas, and you'd get out and walk around, you know, get out and walk around the temple, but instead, let's, you know, take stretch break on your own and come back in 10 minutes, okay? How's that? You can do it. I'm just going to sit here. Yeah, so the sa lung, sa means channels, lung, the breath, the prana, and tilays, the essence drops, bindu, the essence drops of energy. So to correctly do the practices, we need enough energy to do them. So I'll lead people through like really simple 9-breath technique, which is helpful to do before starting, you know, formal practice. So this is all part of Buddhist yoga, you know. Actually, I think some Buddhist yoga got into contemporary Vedic yoga because it said that Iyengar's teacher went to Tibet and studied with some yogis. I don't know if that's true or not. But yogis like yogi shop talk, right? We like to talk and say, hey, what works for you, right? So that's one of the things why I like calling this workshop, because we're doing yogi shop talk. Yeah. Okay, so put like your
I have a bad shoulder, so it's not real straight. So, but when the straighter the arms, you can see the belly relaxes, right? It really opens up the whole torso. So we're breathing. On the out-breath, slide right on down. And then more like Vajra fifth, right? Don't have your finger up. Like Vajra fifth. Well, this is when you go out like this. Let's try it again. Generally just do one time, but we're going to do it again. You want to relax the belly, right? Yeah. So anyway, get all tense now. Left hand's a little forceful.
Very, very simple Salung practice is you need to be able to do this. Okay, so it's not like, it's not rocking side to side, it's kind of a little bit hula hoop. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing. If you're not sitting properly, you can't really do it. So it's not just going around in circle. You know, this would be just circle. This is actually like your butt's riding up and down like that, you know. It's different than just going around. This is just I don't know if you see the difference, you know. This is just kind of going in circle. But this is, so actually the shoulders are engaged, you know. So like one cheek's coming up and one cheek's going down, you know. and like that. And like head roll, you know? I mean, they're very complicated head rolls in Salong, but, you know, at least do kind of, you know, just a little, you know, just simple Hatha Yoga head roll helps. So we have at least, you know, 9 breaths, kind of pelvic roll. Just technically the term, it, you know, pelvic roll, and then, you know, shoulder rolls. Actually, this is the way it should be done, you know, so the dances, the, you know, the lama dances, the salang practices, all should be, you know, this is dance-like, right? Mm. Then, this one's kind of really important, you know, we need to loosen the jaw, so we're going to do two things like yoga, yawn, and lion's roar, but at least do a big yawn, you know. These three ahs. then this is the silly one, right? So if someone's sleeping next to you, at least go, you know, a little bit. But, you know, the real practice, you know,
it's pretty aggressive, you know. You just, so really, you know, loosening,
really loosening the jaw and loosening the whole face mask, right? Mm-hmm. So, and this, in Mahamudra Dzogchen style, we're not doing Mahayana style. Mahayana style is like kind of Thich Nhat Hanh style a little bit. Like you've probably heard some people study with Thich Nhat Hanh, maybe like sit with half smile. You've heard that, right? We're not smiling. Salong, we're not smiling. So, when doing Mahayana practice, yeah, you're smiling, peaceful Buddha, you know. Here we're like really, it's like a face melt, you know. Really, like, it almost feels like your face is just melting like wax, face melt, you know. And your jaw's a little loose, and, you know, you're not biting, you know. Your mouth is not way open, but just little lips parted. We've seen pictures of, Padmasambhava Guru Rinpoche, just like the eyes are open and just kind of
not super big. But does my mouth look really open? Not so much, but you know, we're not clamping down. We're not clamping down Zen style. You know, we're not smiling. Kind of just. Yeah, just really like the whole thing is just melting. Kind of, yeah. The tongue is just really resting. You know, because when you're doing a little bit more Mahayana practice, the 7-point Vairochana practice for shamatha is, being a little technical here, but that's when your tongue's going, you know, back your teeth a little bit, you know, because a little different posture. This is like you're really dropping down a little bit, you know, so your tongue's not out, but just a little bit open. Yeah, just dropping down. Maybe we should have a few questions since this is workshop, right? Because that was a good question. But then we need a microphone. I don't know. Who has the microphone? Yeah, okay, go ahead.
What about visualizing the three channels during the 9 purification breaths?
Yeah, we can do all that, you know. Then there's visualization of sun and moon, visualizations of anger, you know, attachment, anger, and delusion. There's, you know, visualizing channels, but maybe just for today, people at least get the movement down, right? Like that, because then sometimes a little bit too complicated, but you can if you want to. You're already doing that? Are you saying you're already doing it and like you can do it? Yeah. don't do that anywhere else than here. So you know, all these different practices, you know, basically we're giving some you know, really kind of, you know, basic scaffolding, right? And everyone has to then fill it in a little bit, right? That's why I ask people to come to darshan, come to individual interview, because just open setting like this, we just give kind of rough draft idea, you know, and then you have to kind of fill it in. It's like, you know, here's the basic outlines of the practice. Knowing that even if we said, okay, even if everybody in the room said, I'm going to do exactly this way, right, we're all going to do it a little bit differently, right? So, you know, outline, and we play with that, and then, you know, then it's, you know, fitted to each individual. Yeah. But I want people to get the basic structure, you see, of, you know, you have to have this kind of, you know, this pelvic kind of openness. Well, they have to have the breaths moving, and then you need pelvic openness. you need the shoulder, you need the neck, and you need the face open. You know, if those are closed down, it's going to be difficult. The central channels, you know, bringing the balance of the breath in the center is the number one thing, right? The balance in the center. But then we have to, like, loosen up, you know, these various areas. Because if your pelvic's really tight, it's going to be difficult, right? Shoulders too tight, really difficult. Neck, you know. So finally, if we're biting down on the world, we're not going to get the results either. So those areas I want people to feel that, you know, are dancing. Yeah. Tantric style, deity yoga style, you're feeling like dakinis are dancing, right, in those places. Everyone's got it, huh? No? Pardon me? The joints. Dakinis at joints. Yeah, actually they're everywhere. But yeah, you know, paying particular attention to these transitional places, the joints, you know, then we say, you know, the sky goers, the chondromas are there, you know, dancing. So that's the quality. You want to get this kind of dancing, and then sometimes playful dancing, sometimes a little fierce dancing, right? That makes sense, right? Yes.
So, you know, ever since you told me in Darshan about the face mask, I feel it all the time. Like, all the time. Like, I used to not think about it, but now I'm aware of it, and it's really uncomfortable. And so I just wonder, you know, like, in my work world, you know, I just can't, you know, do these. Even yawning would be perceived probably inappropriate sometimes. Although I work with four-year-olds, they'll probably go with it and roar with me. But I mean, is it just a lifetime of a face mask? Is that why? I mean, I feel it right now even. I feel it all the time.
We've really built up a lot of our personality around our mask, yeah. So feels like us, you know, feels like me, like that. So, it just takes a lot of practice. If you want extra help, you can find some really sadistic rolfer that, like, many years ago, I had one of these rolfers, and she said, "Do you want me to do a little bit of work on your face?" You know, and I thought, like, massage, you just kind of do a little jaw work. And she did that. Had somebody really go into your jaw like that, you know? There's usually a lot of tension there, right? But then she says, you know, "If it's okay, I'd just like to do a little bit on the inside." And then she got her thumb, like, inside the mouth, you know? And I was starting to go, "Whoa, this is..." You know. And then she says, "Well, you're doing really good with this. Is it okay if I just take it a little bit more?" And then she just, you know, like, took her finger and, like, went way up my nose. Okay, from inside. And I was ready to, you know, we're in sinus passages and everything. She had a glove on. I don't know, it was the 80s. Maybe she didn't have a glove on, I don't know. But, you know, after the session, my face was so open, you know, that it felt just totally transparent and you know, kind of very vulnerable, but it was great, you know. Yeah, because if, you know, so, you know, body work combined with, you know, doing these practices can really help, yeah. But usually we're carrying kind of a mask, you know. Yeah. So we need to do, like, at least yoga yawn or lion's roar kind of thing, or just, you know, do my little flibbity-gibbet thing. You know. Yeah, you can yawn at work, can't you? Kind of go, oh, you know, it's just kind of, oh, it's a beautiful day. Yes.
Being so new and doing that was rather comical to me.
Yeah.
To put myself in that position of doing the hula and whatever else, and not laughing at anybody else, but laughing at myself. You know. Actually, I did look a little strange doing that, but I'm not used to seeing you do that. What I pulled out of that, though, was Scott and I have worked for modeling companies and acting companies, and one thing that we learned that they taught the students is they would play music, only the students were to dance crazy and silly and didn't make any sense. And this was to break down the barriers of self. I pulled that away from that. It's like, wow. I think I might have had a light bulb moment on that one. Mm. So, but don't ask me to do the hula right now, please. Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
So now maybe we're ready to do just some silent sitting. the sitting still practice we do in Mahamudra and Dzogchen, is a very dynamic practice because we've done these practices. We've really built up our energy, right? There's from Korean Zen called Yangman Janjin, I think. Leaping like a tiger while sitting. I did some practices with Sung San San's name before I passed away. Leaping like a tiger while sitting. That's a nice image, right? Yeah. Generally, in shamatha practice, thank you for monitoring the microphone, Dana. Appreciate that. Usually, hands are like folded in our lap, you know, and dhyana mudra. But frequently in Dzogchen Mahamudra practice, we're doing siddha style. You just hands on your thighs like that, like flat down like that. So it's a little bit more open stance, right? You know, this is bringing dhyana mudra down to your lower chakras is very concentrative, but we're just assuming you've already mastered concentration and meditation, samadhi. So then you can put you can put your hands on your thighs, that style. Yeah. And Mahamudra Dzogchen practice, like, we don't know how long we're going to sit for. Okay, so, you know, usually in shamatha practice, say, okay, I'm sitting for 6 minutes, 12 minutes, 24, then I'm taking breaks, you know, da-da-da-da. Here we don't know, right? We could sit here for 2 hours or just 2 minutes, right? Don't know? Does that make it easier for you or harder? Thank you. So actually, we're still developing bodhicitta at this point. You know, what path? You know, people are saying, well, what are the five folds are we on now? Still bodhicitta, you know, because came here, you know, people did prostrations, did prayers, you know, when started off being kind of dreamy and then doing the energy work, Salung. The bodhicitta, the developing the spirit of awakening, the wish to become a Buddha and benefit all beings, is not something we do just with the relative mind. Are fundamentally doing it with the union of the relative and absolute awareness. If we're developing bodhicitta and we're just thinking there's just ordinary me, the person that, you know, struggling in Sacramento, then of course it seems ridiculous. Why? How could we ever become awakened and benefit all beings, right? Because I've had a number of people saying, I just can't do that, you know, that's too much. I'm not going to take bodhisattva vows, or I can't do it. And I go, well, the good news is you don't do it. So to really correctly do bodhicitta practice, we have to develop this aspiration, develop some sense of view for at least Prajnaparamita style, and then we're doing a little dreamy work. It's in a dream that we decide to, you know, do something really. In a dream, we decide to get, you know, get married and have kids or do something, you know. People lots of times say, what was I thinking? They should say, what was I dreaming, you know? So it's a dream to say I want to be awake. It's a dream to say I want to help others. It's a dream to say I want to, you know, do this, build a gompa, so forth, right? Dreamy. It's not your practical, strategic ego that's saying I want to do all these things, the dreamy world. And then we give some energy to the practices that we just did. The next way we develop bodhicitta is hardest for our Westerners. It's meditating on meditating on the kindness and compassion of our mothers, you know, right? So I'm kind of joking, hardest. Maybe it's hard for Tibetans too, I don't know, but and Indians, but when we're going to take a break and then do that 7-point cause and effect meditation, and then we'll do some Yidam practice around Vajrasattva 11. But now we need to take our 10 minutes, right? Can we do it? Michael said yes, so we can do it.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. I was checking a little bit, like, did I lose anybody or gain anybody here? So, you know, it's like, okay. So, now, for the next until lunch, we're working with some wonderful heavy duty issues. This session, mothers, and then 11 o'clock, we'll talk about a guilt. So one of the primary ways of developing bodhicitta is through remembering the kindness of our mothers. I'm not doing anything wrong on my side, it's just happening right now. I just want to try something, yeah. It's not grounded. Yeah. Can't move it. Oh, that's touching that. Okay. Stop touching it. Okay. All right. The grounding, yeah. Happened anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Can't yell. We have to record it. Okay. No, I'll hold it. It's okay. I'm just putting like this down. So. Yeah, just in. Yeah, the other mic, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's see. Maybe, yeah, that's it. That might be it. I don't know. Switch mics. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, leave it off. Okay, we'll see. Okay, I'll just pass off my mic. That's no big deal. Yeah. No. Maybe that's it. Yeah. Yeah. In American Dharma, generally, I found there two big stumbling blocks. People. You know, have a hard time with their moms, and then we have a hard time with guilt. So those are two things people have a hard time with anyway, right? You know, like family of origin things, or families, and then the feeling that we've hurt others or done something wrong. So sometimes in American Dharma practice, I've noticed it's kind of, people just skip over it, right? And almost like if there's a movie back in the 60s, Love Story, shows how old I am, you know, it's like, love means never having to say you're sorry, you know? So I think sometimes people do Dharma practice like they think, well, if I'm mindful all the time, I won't make any mistakes, so I won't have to say I'm sorry or feel guilty. And family of origin stuff and mommy stuff's just for psychology, so we won't deal with any of that, because it doesn't look like, you know, meditation has anything to do with guilt or mommies. But it does. So in developing bodhicitta, we work with these very strong energies, work with developing gratitude and wishing to help someone that we have, no matter what our relationship is, a very strong attachment and connection with. So it's kind of essential practice, not just for you know, saying, well, mom's a good thing to remember, how kind moms are, carried me for 9 months, and then, you know, wiped myself, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's more like we're in Tantra style, we're willing to deal with two really strong energies, the, you know, working with where we came from, and who's, you know, primarily related with, and then working with strong feelings of guilt and remorse. We have to deal with those two. Does that make sense? You have to work with that. No. But for developing just the mechanics, the yogas of the altruistic intention, there's, just to be scholarly here, there's what's called Lojong mind training in Tibetan. These are the practices that develop to be very practical supports for compassion. And one's called the 7-point mind training. And there's some of the texts that I'm consulting from today that we're using. Alan Wallace has done a nice translation of 7-point mind training. That's kind of been around for a while. Snow Lion, 1992. 7-point mind training. I think we've already, you know, talked about. Susan, you've done a little bit, right? Yeah, Geshe Chikawa, 7-point mind training. And then another very useful commentary on 7-point mind training by First Dalai Lama, called Training the Mind in the Great Way, Glenn Mullen. Glenn Mullen also has very strong opinions about how to translate things. Yeah, you know, good stuff. So Training the Mind in the Great Way by First Dalai Lama. Then also there's a very famous text called 37 Practices of Bodhisattva. And we're very you know, lucky to have a translation and commentary. It's called a book called Transforming Adversity into Joy and Courage by Geshe Jampa Techuk, who's taught here in Sacramento at my invitation. Have a nice signed copy here. I should have this wrapped in brocade, really, you know. So 37 Practices, this is by Gyatso Togma Sangpo, also 14th century teacher. So these are the root texts like that. Wait, can I put it back in here now? I don't know if anybody was here then. Geshe Techuk came and taught at the Sierra 2 Center in the 24th Street Theater. Anybody ever seen a show there? Yeah. Anybody been there when the air conditioning hasn't worked? Yeah, that was one of those days. Yeah. So basic practice is a bodhicitta from the mother standpoint is wanting to repay kindness of all mother sentient beings. All beings at one point have been our mother, according to Mahayana, Vajrayana standpoint. And they've not only given birth to us, but taken care of us. So we want to repay their kindness. This is a little different than developing bodhicitta on wanting to just become enlightened, or Buddha, or just bodhisattva, and bodhicitta practice based on wanting just to help others, right? A little bit different, right? There's kind of three styles, a little bit like one, just like, enlightenment, Buddhahood sounds like a really great idea, you know, really blissful and just kind of totally cool. So I want that. You know, that's the best. I want to be free, and I want the best. So those two motivations, and then third motivation is I just want to, you know, be a Buddha to help beings. I can see their suffering. But the fourth style, wanting to repay their kindness, many times is seen as most powerful. So it's a little different than wanting to free ourselves, wanting to just have enlightened mind, wanting to just help. We're trying to give back. Some people consider this the strongest motivation for developing bodhicitta. Lots of times motivation, you know, as we continue to practice is we want to give back because of all the wonderful teachers we've had. So we want to give back because of our own Salvay Lama, you know, we want to give back because of that too. So that's why sometimes we regard our Ru teacher as, you know, our highest mother, you know, Lama, like that. So I'm going to tailor, you know, not take you kind of scholarly through each step, but a little bit guided meditation and leave you on your own is that with your actual mother or your stepmother or your adopted mother or your foster mother, You need to identify a quality that allowed you to be who you are now, allowed you to come to Dharma, that was helpful and nurturing, even if it was just giving biological life, you know, like precious human life, and realize that that quality exists as existed with all our previous mother beings and all beings now, all going forward. So we're not just trying to think of the mother in a personality way, but the quality of you know, maybe our personal mother that we see as the most positive quality that we want to that helped us and we want to repay to other beings. Even if it's just giving us life. For example, like my own personal mother, whose name was Ruthie. No one names their kids Ruth anymore. Have you noticed that? That's that name. So, but she had very inquisitive mind. I think she just met Geshe-Gyatso once. He didn't speak a lot of English, so he may not have been asked a question, but I had two Zen teachers, and one time I had Sasaki Roshi over for dinner at my parents' house, and she asked Roshi over dinner, this is my mom, like, well, how do I know you're enlightened? That's a good question. Do you already know what he said? First of all, he said, you don't. And then said, you know, if you regard all beings as your children, then you're awakened, right? That's a nice answer. And then when she met Aiken Roshi, Robert Aiken Roshi from Hawaii, we were having lunch, and she asked, "How do you know to Roshi?" It's like these impertinent questions, which I love. Like, do you think you've done any good? How do you know? You know? She said, and Actually, he looked a little bit annoyed. He said, well, I've, you know, I remember what he said. He says, well, I've given it a good push. You know, those are two important questions. How do I know you're awake? And, you know, how do you know you've done any good, right? Those are good qualities, that kind of incisive kind of question like that. So I want to, you know, repay that kind of fearless inquisitiveness like that. So that's one, just an example, right? qualities that, you know, difficult to pay back quality would be whenever I saw her, she'd say, have you gained a little weight, you know? Are you still playing tennis? No, I'm not playing tennis. Yeah. Okay, so we're trying to identify with, you know, try to identify with a quality, because in doing the mother meditation, it's important. We're not repaying the personality of the mother. We're repaying the mother qualities. That's clear? Shake your head like this way. Clear. Oh, okay, that's important. So in the meditation, we'll be quiet, then you want to identify that quality that you would like to play forward, that you would like to bring to fruition in your own life, and work with that. That's developing the bodhicitta. That's, you know, repaying means you're mastering it and bringing it forward. Do you notice the meditations are getting longer? Yeah. So in our tradition, we start out short and then get longer. So different than another style would be, while you're alert, they're longer, and while you're not so tired, they're shorter, right? That would make a certain kind of sense, right? You know, so in the morning, sit longer when you're more alert, or something, and then when you're tired, shit, do it shorter, right? We're opposite. So when you're tired, your ego's tired too. That's the idea. Okay. So developing this love, you know, want to embody the qualities and pay them back, that preserving quality of love. And Tantra style, it just melts us, you know. We just melt. We start crying, not only because it's so beautiful, but we can't do it. We can't really totally repay it, you know. We can't, you know, we just kind of like just, you know, fall apart. So, you know, it's said in our Tantra Mahamudra tradition, you know, if you can't come to the Lama Darshan with tears and saying, I can't do this anymore, then you're not doing the practice. I know some of you had that experience already. I just can't do it. You know, so then we'll take a break, and then the residual from the you know, falling apart, watery feeling, is that there's some leftover, right? You know, some remorse. We've done something wrong. We haven't been able to do it. And then we do the purification of Vajrasattva, right? So we create, in our tradition, a sense of organized failure, right? Because we can't do it, and then there's that feeling, I just can't do it, and I've done something wrong or been incomplete, and then we do the Vajrasattva based on that, right? So that's why in the Tantra sense, symbolically, you know, we talk about the white drops and the red drops. The red is the aspiration, the fiery, I can do this thing, you know, I can get enlightened, love people, finish the practice. you know, get the house finished, fix the toilet, everything. And the watery, it melts, and then we just can't do it, right? So sad, we just can't do it. And we kind of fall apart, and then the water of the sadness meets the fire of the aspiration, and then it produces the great bliss world. Does anybody here know what I'm talking about? I think some people do, you know. Otherwise, it's just kind of like red drops meet white drops and you get bliss. No, so it's the sadness meets the love. Do you want to hear that again? The sadness and the love come together and you get the bliss. That's incredible. Okay, so let's take our 10-minute break. We'll come back and do Vajrasattva practice. I think Susan's, welcome back. I think Susan's, handed out the Vajrasattva practice, and this is a Vajrasattva father-mother practice, you know, so Vajrasattva with consort sometimes. Same as the tanka on the wall. So this is where I say the sadness and the love meet, right? And generate this bliss and this purification. So when we try to practice a lot, we simultaneously feel that we haven't done enough. We feel some things like lacking. So it's necessary to do practice to appreciate that state, the natural purity of I'm not doing enough. That's Vajrasattva practice. So we don't have time to go through the whole practice today, but I want people to get the spirit of the practice of doing Vajrasattva. from Dzogchen point of view. So like in the inside the first page we have why we practice Vajrasattva. Sometimes we lose our balance, step off the path, and get out of touch with our basic goodness. Using the power of meditation, visualization, mantra, and our innate awareness, Vajrasattva practice helps us return to balance and to re-experience the indestructible goodness of our Buddha nature. But when we say get back to our indestructible goodness, it's not goodness opposed to like badness. It's more like a line from Leonard Cohen song or poem or something. Cracks are what lets the light through. Anybody like Leonard Cohen? He passed away like last year. or earlier this year, maybe, you know, he was actually a very dedicated Zen practitioner in addition to poet and musician. So I had an opportunity to get to know him a little bit. So I like that, cracks or what, let the light through. So the Vajrasattva practice, we're, you know, acknowledging our cracks and we're letting the light through. Yeah, like that. That's it. Is that the correct? Is that the correct? Is that the actual poem, the song?
I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Don't make a perfect offering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So when we say great perfection, meditation, yeah, or the six perfections, then we mean perfect from a different level, right? Yeah. Okay. So maybe we can read through. Might be some repetition. Would that be okay? People say it again. Okay. So on page one, I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge until I'm enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. I take refuge until I'm enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. I take refuge until I'm enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness in the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant. Now the recognition. So this is where we want to, you know, we're not just saying the words, but we have some flash of recognition of this balance. So when you say the words, there's still that, have your eyes open, right? We recognize our innate instructable balance. We recognize we are off balance. Purification. May the surface of the earth in every direction be stainless and pure without roughness or fault, as smooth as the palm of a child's soft hand, and as naturally polished as lapis lazuli. May the material offerings of gods and men, both those set before me and those visualized, like a cloud of offerings of Samantabhadra, pervade and encompass the vastness of space. We're going to go a little fast. So you're supposed to kind of lose your place a little bit. Can you do that? Can you lose your place and let the light shine in a little bit? Can you do that? Yeah. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vajrasara Paramadane Tata Gataya Arahate Samyaklam Buddhaya Dayata Om Vajra Vajra Maha Vajra Maha Dedza Vajra Maha Vidya Vajra Maha Bodhi Jita Vajra Maha Bodhi Mandra Pasam Dhamma Nash Vajra Vajra Karma Avara Navishadana Vajra Soha Om Namo Bhagavate Vajrasara Paramadane Tata Gataya Arahate Samyaklam Buddhaya Tayata Om Vajra Vajra Maha Vajra Maha Deja Vajra Maha Vidya Vajra Maha Bodhi Chidya Vajra Maha Bodhi Mandra Basama Andradana Vajra Sarakam Avarana Vishadana Vajra Soha Om Namo Bhagavate Sarana By the force of the truth from the three jewels of refuge, by the firm inspiration from all the bodhisattvas and buddhas, by the power of all buddhas who have fully completed their collections of both good merit and insight, by the might of the void, inconceivable and pure, may all of these offerings be hereby transformed into their actual nature of complete openness. Now regret. On my right side is my father, on my left side is my mother. Those people and other beings I find agitating are in front of me. People and other beings I am attached to are behind me. All other sentient beings are surrounding me. I have in some way become preoccupied with my misperceived self and lost sight of my Buddha nature. I have allowed the profound openness of the sky to slip from me, and in so doing have misstepped into unbalance. I have lost my way, and my actions have even caused grief to others. And remorse. My heart aches as I see clearly through what I have done, betraying those virtues I hold most closely to my heart. I cannot walk this path that causes sorrow any further. Refuge. With refuge, we take steps off the unbalanced path and the first steps on a return to balance. This is our safe direction. At all times, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in the three vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, and in the bodhisattvas of the ten bhumis. But most of all, I take refuge in my Holy Lama forever. Holy Lama, who has the power to liberate me, my inner master, holder of the Vajra, whose essence is great compassion, Lord of all migratory beings, to you I go for refuge. Holy Lama, who has the power to liberate me, my inner master, holder of the Vajra, whose essence is great compassion, Lord of all migratory beings, to you I go for refuge. Holy Lama, who has the power to liberate me, my inner master, holder of the Vajra, whose essence is great compassion, Lord of all migratory beings, to you I go for refuge. Now generating bodhicitta. With bodhicitta, we take steps off the lesser path and the first steps onto the greater path. I myself will become Haruka Vajrasattva for the sake of all living beings, and then I will lead all of them to Haruka Vajrasattva's supreme state. I myself will become Haruka Vajrasattva for the sake of all living beings, and then I will lead all of them to Haruka Vajrasattva's supreme state. I myself will become Haruka Vajrasattva for the sake of all living beings, and that I will lead all of them to Haruka Vajrasattva's supreme state. Now, visualization of Haruka Vajrasattva. Out of the open space of Dharmakaya, the sky-like nature of mind, about 6 inches above the crown of my head, appears a seed-syllable palm, which transforms into a 1,000-petal lotus. On top of the lotus appears the seed syllable, Ah, which transforms into a moon disc. At the center of the moon disc stands the seed syllable, Hung. Suddenly, the Hung transforms into white, five-pronged Vajra, with Hung at its center. Much radiant light emanates from both the Hung and the Vajra, going out into the 10 directions, completing the 2 purposes, offering great blissful energy to all lamas and buddhas, and purifying the defilements of all sentient beings. The whole universe melts into light. This light then returns and absorbed by the Hung and the Vajra. The Hung and the Vajra also melt into light and transforms into Haruka Vajrasattva. Vajrasattva is white. He has 1 face and 2 arms. Sitting in the full lotus position, he holds a Vajra in his right hand at his heart and a bell in his left, which rests in his lap. Now, mind purification. His concept, Dorje Nyima Karmo, embraces him, her legs encircling his body. She too is white and has 1 face and 2 arms. She holds a curved knife in her right hand and a skull cup in her left. They are both dressed in robes of heavenly silk and adorned by precious jewel ornaments. They both have the seed syllable Om at the crown chakra, Ah at the throat chakra, and Hung at the heart. Brilliant light radiates from the Hung at the heart, invoking the divine supreme wisdom energy of all the Tathagatas in the space in front of Vajrasattva in the form of the wisdom beings. Ja Hung Mam Ho. They become non-dual, the union of appearance and awareness, free from any fixation. The wisdom beings, who are in the wisdom energy of all the Tathagatas, joyfully sing into Vajrasattva's divine heart, becoming completely one, like a drop of water sinking into the ocean. Now the Vasa impairment. Again, brilliant light radiates from the Hung at the divine heart, invoking all the initiating deities of the 5 families. O Tathagatas, please bestow on me the Haruka Vajrasattva initiation. Upon this request, all the Tathagatas hold up their initiation vases, which are full of the Amrita energy of divine transcendental wisdom, and the Amrita starts to flow. Om Sarva Tathagata Abhishekata Samaya Shriya Om. The divine body of perfect absolute wisdom, Haruka Vajrasattva, is completely filled with Amrita energy of blissful transcendental wisdom. Some Amrita overflows and transforms into Askurbya, who adorns Vajrasattva's crown. The initiation deities melt into light and sink into Vajrasattva. At the center of a moon disk at the divine heart stands the seed syllable Hung, encircled by the 100 syllable mantra. O Bhagavan Vajrasattva, destroyer of all defilements, who has attained all realizations and has passed the other shore, I request you to purify all negativities, vices, and suffering, and broken to damn and pledges of myself and all other sentient beings. Then remedy. Having been thus requested, brilliant light radiates from the mantra rosary and the Hung at the divine heart of Vajrasattva. The light purifies all negativities and obscurations of all sentient beings and becomes an offering for all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. The essence of the perfect qualities of their holy body, speech, and mind, and all their transcendental knowledge wisdom returns in the form of light that sinks into the Hung and the mantra rosary at Vajrasattva's divine heart. From the Hung and the mantra rosary, a stream of blissful white Amrita energy begins to flow down through the central channel of the divine couple. The Amrita flows out through their secret chakras in union and flows into me through my crown chakra. Flowing down through my central channel, this stream of transcendental wisdom, Amrita energy, fills my whole body, destroying all those negativities and defilements of our body, speech, and mind. These are completely purified. So take a minute to rest in meditation. Oh my. So 100 syllable mantra. Yeah. Should we do 108? Maybe. No, we'll just do when I ring the bell, that means that's the last one. Okay. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manubalaya Vajrasattva Dinapadita Dhidamibhava Sudhukaya Mibhava Subhukaya Mibhava Hanurakta Mibhava Sarasiddhi Mamprayas Kama Sisame Sitam Shriam Guru Hung Ha Ha Ho Bhagavan Sarvatatangata Vanjamami Mitsa Vajrabhava Mahasamiya Safada Hunde Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manubalaya Vajrasattva Dinapa Dinadrina Mebawa Tudakaya Mebawa Zivakaya Mebawa Hanarakta Mebawa Sarva Siddhi Mambrayasa Sarva Kama Sisame Sitam Shriam Guru Hung Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Bhagavan Saradanangada Vajramami Mitsa Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sattva Ahung Be Vajrasattva Samaya Manubalaya Vajrasattva Dinapa Dita Dita Mebhava Sudakaya Mebhava Subhukaya Mebhava Narakta Mebhava Sarasiddhi Mambrayata Saragama Tsutsami Nidam Shuram Guru Hung Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Saradanangada Vinsamami Mitsa Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manubalaya Vajrasattva Dinapa Dijadita Mibhava Sudhukaya Mibhava Nubhagaya Mibhava Hanurakta Mibhava Sarasiddhi Mambrayasa Sarakama Tsutsami Nidam Shiram Guru Hung Ha 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 Bhagavan Saradada Gada Vajramami Mitsa Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sattva Vajrasattva Samaya Manubalaya Vajrasattva Dinapa Dinadrita Mibhava Nudakaya Mibhava Subhukaya Mibhava Hanurakta Mibhava Sarasiddhi Mambrayasa Sarakama Sutami Sitam Shuram Kuru Hung Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Dharatata Gata Vajramami Mutsa Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sato Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manubalaya Vajrasattva Dinapa Dinadrita Mibhava Sudhukaya Mibhava Subhagaya Mebhava Anurakta Mebhava Sarasiddhi Mambrayasa Saragama Tsutsami Nidam Shriam Guru Hung Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Saradada Gada Vajramami Mitsa Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sato Ahung Bhe Vajrasattva Samaya Manubalaya Vajrasattva Dinapa Dinadrita Mebhava Nidagaya Mebhava Subhagaya Mebhava Anurakta Mebhava Sarasiddhi Mambrayasa Saragama Tsutsami Nidam Shriam Guru Hung Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Saradada Gada Vajramami Mitsa Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sato Ahung Bhe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Om Vajrasattva Om Om Vajrasattva. So praise now. Non-dual divine wisdom, magnificent inner jewel ornament of all mother sentient beings, supreme, unchanging, everlasting, great bliss, indestructible, magnificent wisdom mind that releases all sentient beings from all negativities of body, speech, and mind, especially broken vows and pledges. To you, glorious Vajrasattva, I prostrate. Vajrasattva says, O child of good family, your negativities and obscurations and damaged and broken pledges are cleansed and purified. You are restored to your pure Buddha nature. Then resolve. Guided by the wisdom mind of perfect freedom, from this moment on, without hesitation or reservation, I will abstain from all the errors that I can abstain from, and I will abstain from all those that are extremely difficult for me to abstain from, for one day, 1 hour, 1 minute, or at least a few seconds. So, then repair. Now that I have sought for myself the antidote for my misguided actions, I will, as far as possible, go forth and atone for those actions, making available that antidote to those whom I have affected. Further, I will return to the refuge of Vajrasattva, again seeking his remedy for any future obscurations that divide me from my awareness and wakefulness. Now return. Dorje Nama Kamo is transformed into light and is absorbed into Vajrasattva. Vajrasattva then melts into light and sinks into my heart. My three doors of body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Vajrasattva's holy body, speech, and mind. Vajrasattva and I are completely one, and I enjoy the bliss of Shunyata in full samadhi, beyond the dualistic view that discriminates between subject and object. We are home after a long journey. We are complete. Then rest. We rest in unfabricated ease. Easy. So this morning, we've worked through those initial three stages, doing bodhicitta with the Vajrasattva practice. We're doing the Idam and Guru Yoga practices. through our Guru Vajrasattva, those people that have Sawai Lama, Rud Lama, then that Rud Lama and Vajrasattva are inseparable. But this afternoon we will be going into the Mahamudra meditations directly. So some of you I'll see at 1 o'clock, right? Some of you I know have things to do, lunch to get. We have a few moments for questions, comments, and complaints. I always want some complaints, you know? So, yeah. Yes, sir. Yes. Yeah, so long. Yeah. I put this text together to be very complete. So when people are doing the Vajrasattva practice, they are doing it both from, kind of meditation side and also from Dzogchen contemplative side. So we cover everything, yeah. Yeah, just simple, yeah. Kind of idea with the short Vajrasattva mantra is we're kind of taking that with us, so to speak. So a lot of times in Dirk's asking question, good question, a lot of times there's of course in a very full text, you've got a whole bunch of mantras, Elton's mantra, heart mantra, action mantra, blah, blah, blah. And then, and it's kind of like the short kind of, you know, take this with you kind of mantra like that. But as the, in some sense, as the teachings get higher, they get more simple, you know. So, Om Vajrasattva Hum. Simple. Yeah. Easy, right, Patty? It's easy. So when the you know, the melting and then the fire meet, when the you know, that fiery energy and the melting energy, then, you know, we have the real bliss, right? And the wisdom mind, the awareness mind, the blissful mind work well together, don't they? What do you think? Yeah. So this afternoon we'll go over, there'll be longer sittings. Who wants, some people complain there's not enough long, who likes longer sittings? Okay, so we'll get longer as the day gets longer, right? That makes sense, right?
What?
Makes sense. The day gets longer, longer sitting. Okay, good deal. Om Ahang. So I'll be here over lunch, and then afterwards I'll be here. Turka has the ability to set up, you know, if people want some, you know, short interviews, I'm available. I like to talk to people and meet. Thank you for coming. Bye. So maybe any more questions and comments? We should take break. No? Lunch break? We'll do dedication at, yeah, when people come back. Unless you're not coming back. So we do one. We'll do a short dedication. We won't do long life, huh? So do a short dedication practice. Just turn to short dedication. Yeah, we can do it right from Vajrasattva. Go ahead, Peter, you can lead. Just the bodhicitta dedication, not the long life. Yeah. It's right on there. It's right there. Do you see it? Do you see the picture of Dalai Lama right in front of you? Yeah, that one. Yeah. Go ahead. Om Ahang. Good. See you soon. Yeah. See. But it's good to start on time. Human beings find it difficult to, like, do nothing. That's why we're, you know, why we do a lot of sitting practice, because we need to learn to leave things as they are. It's really difficult. Mahamudra Dzogchen means recognizing leaving things as they are. we have to do all these different practices to kind of loosen things up in a way so we can leave things as they are. So in a sense, we do have to change things to leave things as they are. We have to do something, oddly enough. But we do a lot of sitting practice because we have to just sit and let things wind down. So there's a metaphor in Dzogchen that eventually the bird has to land, you know. We can hear the words, leave the mind as it is, leave it in its natural state, don't change anything, but, you know, we don't believe it. You know? So we have to do these experiments to see, you know, what that's like in the natural state. So we're kind of like teenagers. We have to screw with our parents a little bit to see, you know, what's for real and what isn't. You know, we want to poke and see, you know, well, what changes and what doesn't change. We have to actually experiment. So the practices we do on the relative level, the dualistic practices we do, and in a sense are this kind of experiment, right? We have to kind of see, well, what we have to push the boundary a little bit, push our inner parents, father and mother, yabhyam, a little bit, push it, and then see, like, well, what's really natural and what's not? We're not sure right now, right? So leaving the mind, but that's not a strategy. That's the hard part. It feels like a strategy. I'll leave my mind just as it is, and then I'll get it, you know? So sometimes it's better to say nothing, but we have to say something, so we say the mind in its natural state. But we do have to discover what the natural state is, so we have to mess with it a little bit. We have to just do nothing. We have to do relative practice for a while. We have to watch ourselves, watching ourselves, until we get bored with ourselves. So afternoon practice is supposed to be a little bit boring, not so interesting. And a full retreat, let's say we had 3 years. First year, learning the techniques. Second year, applying the techniques. Third year, getting really bored with them. So even in a weekend practice, daily practice, you know, we're learning them, applying them, and getting bored with them. The five paths that we talk about are the path of accumulation, then the path of joining, prayoga marga, accumulation, then the path of seeing, right, darshana marga, then path of meditation, bhavana marga, you know, then that is the path of no more practice, no more meditation. So when we say getting bored, you know, we're getting towards that place of I'm not meditating anymore, I'm not the one doing this, but we're still doing it. So when we say get bored, I don't mean quit. We mean getting bored with our constant need for reassurance and validation and reference point. So are we ready to do some sitting now? Is that boring enough? I could keep talking. Yeah, okay, we'll get bored. Very good. For those that have left, welcome back. For those that stayed here. Okay. So, this practice is as now. So, it, you know, really is present, being present, presence. So, now is now, right? So, that's important, actually. It's a popular word, you know, like Eckhart Tolle's now. I'm not sure his now, but Mahamudrin Dzogchen now is our lived experience is the now. It's, we're not talking about time particularly. When we say now, we're talking about our lived experience, right? So we're not talking, you know, like we're not talking abstract time like tick, that's now, talk now. It's our lived experience is now. So we're not trying to like, we're not generally talking past, present, future. Sometimes we say three times, you know. That's our way of saying no time, all time, and now. Now is our lived experience, not just, you know, like now as opposed to past, present, and future. Actually, there is no like now clock time, right? So if someone says, well, there's no past and future, that means there's also no now, okay, correct? I know there's one person here reading Nagarjuna's root verses. If there's no past, no future, can there be a now? No, right? So so the now we're talking about is the lived experience now, not clock time. So that's really good news from our point of view. We could be in the past or the future, because it's our lived experience, right? So, some of you are liberating. Somebody says, no, you've got to be in the present. And you were thinking, well, maybe I was thinking about this wonderful vacation we had last year. And you're going, no, in the present. Well, that's your lived experience, right? You're in your present to your memory. That's your lived experience, isn't it? Yeah. So, that's what's fun about doing Mahamudra and Dzogchen. We're not trapped, you know? Great. And, you know, Dzogchen, not trapped, you know? So you can say, well, my lived experience is I'm remembering, or my lived experience is I'm, you know, I'm anticipating, really looking forward to seeing you. And, then, you know, that's our lived experience, isn't it? Yeah. So let's be clear, we're not talking in our now. I don't know Eckhart Tolle's now or Zen now or anything, you know, but we're talking our lived experience. We're present too. We're present to the future. We're present to our anticipation, like that. In Dzogchen, we're not inside and not outside. So we're not trying to go within, have an inner experience. We're not trying to go outside either and contact something outside. We're right in the middle. Not centralizing in, not centralizing out. Most of the time in relative meditation, dualistic meditation, we're kind of going in or we're kind of trying to contact something outer or greater, aren't we? Dzogchen, we're Mahamudra, like not going in, not centralizing in, not centralizing out. We're not even making the middle into like now I'm nailing myself to the middle, you know, just that's kind of difficult because most meditation is a little bit going in, don't you think? In yoga, a little bit going inside. Let's close our eyes, go inside. So eyes are open, generally, you know, actually Dzogchen style, we're just looking straight ahead. We've seen pictures, statues, Guru Rinpoche, just straight ahead, right? Not like kind of like nailing it straight ahead, just... It's easier when we're outside, like Lotus View, or just, you know, like you're looking just out at far, out to the, over the grass, the mountains. So it's a little harder in a closed setting, but, you know, we're just kind of like even. So I know some of you are used to looking down or closing eyes, so just think of like, I'm just sitting here. Like if you're talking to your friend for lunch, you're not looking down, right? You're just like looking. So these three essential points, very important. Now, meaning our lived experience, what we're present to, not centralizing in or out, not creating inner reference point or outer reference point, and open, our ears are open, our eyes are open, our tongues, you know, mouth open a little bit, right? Open, you know, open stance. Easy. So just present to our experience, not focusing in or out. Senses open. Of course, now that we're doing Mahamudra and Dzogchen, we are not creating fixation from our appearances, right? Any appearances or thoughts, phenomena that arise are automatically liberated, are they not? So, I've suggested to people that, you know, we'll start off by reading Talopa's Ganges Mahamudra, given to Naropa, bank of Ganges, Ganga. That translation is taken from Drungpa Rinpoche's book, where he also gives a commentary on Ganges Mahamudra. So that's kind of a little philosophical with practice. I mean, they're nice, they're questions, answers in the book too. Then for retreat, clarifying natural state. That's nice, not too thick, right? Who has that book? Hands up, like, book. Yeah, good, it's good, right? Clarifying Dagpo Tashi Namgyal, right? Easy to read. Crystal clear is commentary on that. Crystal clear is commentary on clarifying the natural state. Yeah. About the same. Yeah, no, the retreat manual is a little shorter. It's like, you know, if you're reading Lotus Sutra, you know, it's good to read Jean Rhee's stories of Lotus Sutra. So generally, there's always two things, and traditional Buddha Dharma, we have kind of the pithy instructions that are meant to be a little bit, you know, in crowd, and then we have the commentary, which is kind of the explanation.
Are you talking about two separate books or one book combined?
Two separate books, yeah. So both Ranjong Yeshe publications, you know. Then at the retreat also, earlier this year, read from Garb Dorje's, you know, three points, right? And then Pato Rinpoche has beautiful commentary on those three points. Some people say that's all you need. That's it. Maybe it is. That's all you need. You know, it's like, got it, you know. So I want to make things, you know, easy for you guys. If you read, you know, Moonbeams of Mahamudra, like that thick, right, you know. So, but it's good, you know, so, you know, but start off. Okay, so let's have a few questions and comments, then take break, then more doing nothing. The three points, you know, Agab Dorje is recognize the natural state. Recognize. Usually we have to be introduced to it. Usually we need teacher to go, that's it, you know, and then we go, oh, you know. Then the second point is decide on one thing. We're developing, you know, that real confidence. That's it, you know. Decide on, you know, the confidence. It can't be anything else, you know. That's. And then the third is the kind of more confidence, and anything that arises is self-liberated. Usually, even after we develop some, you know, insight, we see something and develop some confidence, then there's always kind of a little test, you know, like something begin to manifest, and we have to then also go, oh, that's just like a snake unraveling itself. Thoughts are the display of Rigpa, right? Just display. It's easy to test ourselves on this, you know. Of course, when we're having nifty thoughts, it's easy to go, oh, that's display. when we're criticized, then it's hard to see that as display, isn't it? You know? Why is pride always the hardest thing? I mean, you know, every teacher I've talked to, they're really, you know, the honest teachers go, you know, when my pride is hurt, I get angry. You know, because a lot of times we don't have, there's a lot of insight in nature of things, and then people aren't so greedy, right? But when we get insulted, that becomes a big thing. Right? We don't get what we want, or we get what we don't want. The anger becomes a big problem. It's funny, for even advanced yogis. we have to work on that. You see, even though we've decided on, you know, we've had an introduction to nature, we've seen ultimate nature, and then we develop confidence in it, still when someone kind of criticizes us or we don't get what we want, we get a little angry, right? So we have to notice that's just display. Earlier I said what I got from my mother is asking probing questions, which helps in therapy too, but, you know, it's good to ask, you know, kind of personal questions sometimes. Yeah, we'll see if it goes backwards. So, 1 year ago, I had the wonderful Vidyadhara Chagyur Rinpoche and Chagyur Khandro Jain, you know, over for lunch, and we were just talking, and I said, well, how are you guys getting along? You know, you don't know, just, you know, that's me, you know, how are you guys getting along? And, you know, Rinpoche is the wonderful, I think, Dirk, you met Chagyur Rinpoche, maybe, you know, just incredible. And they're just kind of sitting there. I go, well, do you guys ever get angry with each other? And then, like, Jane just starts laughing. And then Rinpoche starts laughing, you know. That's fun. Then they're just liberating it, right? You know, just liberating it. You know, of course, we all get kind of pissed, you know. But when even the anger can self-liberate if we have that sense of humor, right? If you love someone, you're going to get kind of, you know, annoyed with them from time to time. It doesn't matter, you know. So don't think that if you're doing, if you think, I see nature of ultimate, I see Rigpa, I've developed, you know, Ranjung Yeshe, I have the confidence that there will never be a display that won't kind of rock you a little bit, right? Never think that. That's really silly, right? You know, so just understand that even when the display of duality comes up, still it's self-liberated, right? That's important. Otherwise, we become perfectionist jerks. Really, you know, we've all met yogis, perfectionist jerks. So they're very kind of, you know, not greedy, not, you know, kind of not hostile, but, you know, you get the little bit of too tightness, right? There's not the sense of humor there, you know what I'm saying? So that the thoughts, the emotions, the display, the emanations, roa, you know, are kind of a sense of humor about it, right? So think, you know, we have with these wonderful things like writing and the water disappears right away, and or a snake untangling, that's how self-liberated. Just think sense of humor. Just have a sense of humor about, you know, there I go again, you know. She said it again and I got hooked again, you know, there it goes. Yeah, you know, it's like that, you know, and you go, whoa, God, okay. So, do you need to say questions? Yeah, good comments. Yes. Yeah. 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 So sometimes Western translators, and I like this, talk about intentional practice as meditation, and you know, Yeshe and Rigpa as being contemplation. In other words, there's in contemplation, there's not the normal sense of duality going on, right? But in ground path and fruition style of practice, you know, we're going to start with where we are, right? You know, start with a duality. So, in fact, we need it. We need something to kind of push off from. We need that resistance. So it's natural we start with confusion. So one of the four dharmas of Kambopas, another, you know, important Mahamudras, you know, confusion dawns as clarity. You know, we have to start with that. We have to start with our confusion. So it's generally going to be confusion in the midst of clarity, or clarity in the midst of confusion. Which one do you want? A little bit like that. Yeah. So we're always going to start out a little bit fuzzy, you know. So it's explained as, you know, from far away we see something, we don't know whether it's a tree or a person, right? And then closer as it comes, we don't know whether that's, you know, male or female. Closer it comes, we don't know whether it's friend or enemy, right? So generally, you know, the practice is like that. it's just natural, you know, as we get closer. Yes. Yeah.
And so I'm like, what is happening? Like, you know, because I'm...
That's duality.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, the watcher is trying to watch, then there's another watcher to watch the watcher that's watching.
Yes.
So, yeah, we, you know, like, in... Dujam Rinpoche's Tarasar Nundro, you know, it's fabricated meditation falls apart like the abandon of a madman, you know. The abandon of a madman just falls apart, you know, this fabricated practice, you know, fabricated meditation. So we're trying to fabricate meditation. We're trying to imitate meditation a little bit by, you know, the watcher, okay. But... it's actually a necessary stage. We have to try to do it. So our style is, you know, tantric style is kind of the fast path, but it's also dangerous because we kind of, in a sense, load up the watcher, load up the ego, and until it, you know, kind of fails, you see. So, we experience that, you know, naturally we're kind of doing that, you know, we're kind of adding things up, but, by being involved totally in Lama, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, this fourfold refuge, you know, we'll keep getting loaded up. But to do it right, we're getting support, so in a sense, so that when we fall apart, we're not falling apart on the concrete, you know, we're falling apart in a, we're falling off the tightrope into a net, right? That's the interesting part about Tantra. So we're creating a situation where the ego, the watcher, can no longer sustain itself but falls apart in a safe way. But still, from ego's point of view, it's kind of feels like death. Yeah. Most people don't practice enough to feel that fall apart. You know, they kind of get there and then they kind of pull back, you know. Most people don't surrender, in other words, you know, we just kind of go, oh, something, I'm feeling my, you know, I'm falling apart, and, you know, we kind of patch ourselves back together. But it's a different kind of falling apart than ego's falling apart, because it's liberation falling apart. That's why, you know, like, we need a personal teacher, you know, we need the structure, because ego can really manufacture this whole, you know, I'm talking about this thing, but we can really manufacture our own phony way of looking like we're falling apart in some enlightened way, and, you know, it just becomes spiritual materialism, you know, the way Trungpa Rinpoche talked, you know, it becomes an imitation kind of surrender. So we kind of practice until we give up, you know, but there's going to be this kind of false giving up that can be hard to discern. Yes, sir.
You let the process sort of happen as it's happening, because I guess I have a tendency to, like, when I notice, like, a shift in a positive way, I tend to go, oh, yeah, that's happened, that's good. you know, instead of like just letting it, you know, I tend to want to label it and go like, oh, this is happening, this is a good thing, this is it, and that, and then I just,
yeah, that's it. Yeah, how do we stop doing that? Yeah.
Oh, I just got some concentration in the light. And then it's just falls apart instead of just letting it.
Yeah, that is, we have to realize that. And you know, we keep doing it, and, you know, different things happen. With the proper teaching we and support, we recognize, we see how painful that is. You know, like I'm saying to you right now, that is really painful. It's so painful to do that to ourselves. You know, it's like continually pricking ourselves, you know, so we're just so, it's so tender. It's like we're a burn victim and we're just going back and doing that. Because we're not even aware that that's painful sometimes, right? So we have to have pointed out that is so painful to do that. That's, you know, kind of ego's game to do that. So we have to be introduced that there's another way. You know, we're not going to heal at it by picking at it. So, you know, that those two things come together. We kind of go, oh, that's really painful, and oh, there's another way of doing it. Then it starts to transform. We develop this incredible compassion for ourselves and for others. You know, and that's when we generally, do what's called renunciation in English, which isn't really a good translation. And Tibetan means, it's a translation of nejung, which means death and emergence. Like we really, really, we're tired of drowning, having our head pushed down, you know. I don't know if you've ever had your head pushed underwater. Yeah, you've never been a Boy Scout. I don't know why I'm in this kind of Boy Scout mood, but you know, we used to do these things. Anybody like Boy Scouts? You know, I was like, there were fun things like, let's push your head in the toilet, you know, keep it under there, you know, things like that. That's kind of Boy Scout fun, you know, or underwater, you know, you're swimming and out in the lake and let's see what happens, you know. So, you know, you really get this idea that you definitely want to get a fresh, you know, fresh breath. You know, so there's that definite emergence. You see how awful and painful it is, and you click into this natural sense of wanting to be free rather than kind of, you know, doing that. We naturally want to be free. We naturally want to not harm. So if we didn't, we'd be screwed. So we have that natural tendency. We want to be free. So it has to be pointed out to us, and we have to see an alternative at the same time. So that's why I would say, like, we have to do the shamatha practice so that we see idiot mind and sensible mind at the same time, right? That's the problem why human beings don't get well, because we're flipping, right? You have to see your idiot and your sane person at the same time, totally, like, even. But we usually flip. I want to get rid of my idiot, and then I just want to see my sane mind, right? You know what I'm saying? We want to just do that. Like, I'll get rid of my idiot, and then I'll see. I'll get rid of samsara, then I'll see nirvana, right? That kind of dualistic style practice. It doesn't work. It works to a sense that we're kind of developing some positive qualities, for sure. But you have to see nirvana and samsara at the same time, together. So we have to hear from somebody, you know, I love you and you're an idiot at the same time, you know. I love you, hate you. We have to kind of go, oh, I hate what you do, you know. I hate that you don't clean the pot, and I love you, you know, or something, you know. So we have to see that at the same time. You know, so that's why it's so important to have the right human relationships, the right teachings, the right teacher. So right at the time where you're attached to your sanity, your teacher is showing your idiocy. And right at the time you think you're an idiot, you're seeing your sanity. So they come click together. Because when you see them at the same time, really at the same time, then our natural, co-emergent awareness is present. That's the problem. We're flipping all the time. We're thinking, I'll get rid of this, and then that will dawn. See, like that. that's very dualistic practice, and that, but that's most of what we're doing. So from Tantra point of view, Dzogchen point of view, the teachers, me, I'm kind of going, well, I guess if you're going to do that, just keep on doing it and see if it works for you, right? You know, it is kind of like Dr. Phil, well, how's it working for you? And somebody usually says, well, I just got to try harder at being dualistic. Okay, well, okay, just try harder at being dualistic, you know, and come back next year, you know. But at some point, we're able to see, you know, both things at the same time. And then they're, you know, we're very positive in Dharma, so if you see both your idiocy and sanity at the same time, the mind will come to the middle, to the balance. It's really incredible.
Bhajasattva practice is dualistic until you finally reach the goal of purification. It's dualistic. Somewhere in there, I guess it falls apart.
The Vajrasattva practice, yeah, is both you know, relative and absolute at the same time. Yeah. That's always happening at the same time. It's relative and absolute at the same time. It's completely fine and things are completely screwed up at the same time. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. But it's hard to, it does take a lot of effort to develop the meditative stabilization and the trust to see both things at once, to see both sides at the same time. You know, so that's why so much emphasis is put on trust and devotion in Mahamudra, because it isn't devotion in the sense of, you know, my Lama is so great and da da da. You know, it's really trusting, you know, the natural mind, trusting the process. So you need that trust. You know, so I liken it to, you know, like climbing up a sheer rock face in the dark, and the teacher says, you know, Let go of that foothold down here, just jump up, and there's the handhold right there, but we don't see it, you know? So something in us can make that leap. To move forward, we have to let go of where we were, and you kind of do that. It's difficult, I know. It can be done. Do we take a break? Take 10 minutes and... Yeah, good. Om Aham. Once we get the correct instruction, correct view, how sense of connection with our teacher, with our training, our sangha, then more is better. Yeah, once you get the correct direction, correct support, then yeah, we have to do a lot of practice. It's more is better. Sometimes more fabricated. You know, we have to work also with clarifying dualistic practice too, so for it to also transform into unfabricated practice. So you know, more is better. So there's a saying in recovery, we always have time to drink, you know. We always have time for our addictions, seems like, right? We always have time for chatter. We always have time for, you know, our favorite show. Always have time for, you know, what the political system's doing. So this level of practice we're doing, more is better. Actually, all of Dharma practice, more is better. But we need correct teaching first. So that part's easy. How much practice? You know, so if people say, well, how long should I practice? I should always just say, practice more. Because if you have to ask, if you know, it's like, you know, I think Pema Chodron said, if you have trouble sitting 20 minutes, you got to sit 40, you know, or something, you know. So if you have to ask, how much should I practice, the answer is going to be more. But Yeah, but we need, we do need the correct view and the correct connection, you know, so that's why we're building the bodhicitta practice. We need the correct view and so forth. But then after that, it's more, yeah, which means less distraction. We always have time for our addictions. That's, you know, usually we don't get rid of our addictions until we have some kind of retreat and we see that we don't need them, you know. And then we only get rid of them when we want to do it and then we choose something else. So the Hinayana practice of making choices and keeping the precepts is important, because without that, we don't get the power of choice. We have to feel like doing something stupid and then choose something intelligent to change the neural network. We have to feel like, oh God, I just got to check and see, you know, what the Kardashians are doing, but okay, I'm not. I'm going to do my Dharma practice or see what Donald Trump's doing or something, you know. Yeah. Maybe we need a little bit more air on and then we'll freeze people into awakening. Yeah. Yeah. It's always more. More practice, less distraction. Isn't that so? You know, we do have to cut some certain things out of our lives because it's impermanent. We only have so much time. Maybe it's going to be less sleep for some of you. Maybe it's going to be less, you know, less something, less TV. I don't know, less something. The great, incredible lineage masters, you know, they really took it down to very basic, you know, less everything. And I don't expect that. We're householders, we have responsibilities, but you have to think like we're an airplane that's trying to get off, so we have to toss some things out, right? Yeah. Okay, we ready to do nothing practice? Yeah? Okay. So today's workshop, following the structure of the Jigun Kagyu Mahamudra, with a little bit of Lonchen Nintik thrown in, you know, Jigun Kagyu. So we start with four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma: precious human birth, impermanence, cause and effect, and defects of samsara. Then Nindro practice, which is the refuge in bodhicitta, Vajrasattva. We've done a little bit just in the prayers, mandala offering, and then the Guru Yoga. You know, on retreat, or some people are starting fully the Nindra practice, where you keep track of the numbers you're doing, usually 100 or 111,000 of each, or could be million. but we're always doing refuge of bodhicitta, we're always doing Vajrasattva, we're always doing mandala offering. Mandala offering, formally, of course, is doing mandala plate and so forth, but mandala offering means offering to help out, offering to help out a temple, offering to support temple, making donation, bringing food, those kinds of things are all mandala offering. And then the Guru Yoga is doing correct view of our teacher, ourselves, and our Sangha members, and doing darshan and so forth. So then by doing the bodhicitta practice, the Yidam practice, the Guru Yoga practice, then we can really do the Mahamudra and do it correctly. So really grateful that people have set this up. We have Dona Darge here now. We've able to do the whole thing. It's nice, huh? Yeah, appreciate that. And then have place to do retreat like that. So then it's easy. Just a few minutes for any comments or questions, and then we'll do closing, and I'm going to stay for some like 10-15 minute interviews. So how are you all doing in the back there? How's it going? Back of the bus. How's it going back there? That's good. Yeah, hi Ellen. Yeah. The more we're, you know, doing, we need the foundation practices, you know, so it's kind of a little bit like pyramid, you know, we need that grounding and then the broad practices, and then we kind of build on them, but just like pyramid, you know, as we're building on them, they're less and less reference points. So, of course, when we're doing, you know, really beginning shamatha, we need very strong reference points, very strong, you know, concentrate on this one thing, you know, and all that, you know. So, as we go forward, the reference points become more subtle. So, gradually, you might feel like this. We don't have any reference point, very just open, transparent. But the danger is that you know, people either freak out or it becomes kind of, you know, fuzzy. You know, instead of being spacious, we're spacey, like that. So there sometimes has to be continual reorientation to clarity. You know, everyone's different, you see, you know, so. But the shamatha has to be, you know, somewhat simple and grounded in everything. And then the more practice we do, we don't give that up. It's just we lose the need for certain reference points, right? Yeah. It's easy. Yeah. La la la. Yes.
If I'm supposed to be meditating, yeah, and I find that I have no idea what I'm doing, once you said just go back to the breath again,
yeah, can
you still just
say
that?
Yeah, sure, why not? Okay. Yeah.
Can you just do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. you know, there are all these fun yoga stories. As a group, we're not doing the Cho practice, the cemetery practice, where we're you know, blowing thigh bone trumpets and doing all that. But they're practical yogi things that we have to do, so this applies, you know. So sometimes when doing the Cho practice, people think, you know, they're really the outer demons and they want to take their you know, knife and cut the demons that are coming after them. So the student, I'm making this real short, but the student came to the teacher and said, I want to stab this demon next time he comes with my kila, my dagger. And the teacher said, well, that's fine, but before you do that, when the demon comes, instead take this chalk or this crayon or something and put an X on the demon's belly, right? So you don't stab it incorrectly. So the person did that, demon came, put an X on the belly, and then, when the teacher saw the student again, he says, show me your belly, and the X was on the student's belly, right? You know, so we have to keep in mind that that kind of thing is important. We tend to, project a lot, right? And, returning to just very simple things, like even the Buddha just touched the earth, right? So those kind of things, keep it simple like that. Good question. La la la. Okay, let's do dedication. Merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that is not arisen arise and grow, and that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All powerful Chenrezi Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Teachings of the Buddha flourish, and may the upholders of the teachings remain forever. May all migrators achieve happiness, and they may fulfill all their temporary and ultimate goals.